Next time her pal was in the news was on September 11, 2012, leading an attack on the U.S. diplomatic compound in Benghazi that left Ambassador J. Christopher Stevens dead, a casualty in Hillary Clinton's war. You remember all the lying, treasonous nonsense she spewed when she told us that the embassy attack was spontaneous, the result of an amateur film about Muhammad, when she knew it wasn't. She was just warming up the double talk. Listen to what this destructive scam artist said in June 2016 after Great Britain voted to leave the European Union. This time of uncertainty only underscores the need for calm, steady, experienced leadership in the White House to protect Americans' pocketbooks and livelihoods, to support our friends and allies, to stand up to our adversaries, and to defend our interests. It also underscores the need for us to pull together to solve our challenges as a country, not tear each other down. Experienced leadership? You mean the kind that leaves our people dead in the streets of Benghazi? That allows ISIS to flourish in an unprotected Middle East? That has unleashed millions of refugees from Africa into Europe? Not to tear each other down? This from the woman who uses every opportunity to denigrate Republicans, the Second Amendment, those of us who decry Obama's abuse of executive orders, which, by the way, the Supreme Court verified by virtue of a 4-4 tie, letting stand a lower court ruling on his lawless orders on immigration. This woman dares to lecture us about tearing each other down? Hillary is power mad. And if that means pandering to a patchwork of groups that as little as a decade ago weren't on her radar, then she'll pander. If that means kissing the ring of that street agitator Al Sharpton, she will genuflect and purse her lips. And once she's in power, a lot of corrupt anti-American organizations will have been responsible for putting her there. I'll go through a list of some of them later in this book. Read that list carefully, because under President Clinton, you'll know some of the people, not all of the people, because we'll never know all of the people she's indebted to. And she's going to owe all of them favors. Chapter 2. Our Challenges. It is happening here already. A timid college professor from Cambodia, Pol Pot, went to Paris to study Marxism. When he returned to his native land, he introduced all the tenets of Marxism to that ancient nation. What happened next was as horrifying as it was astonishing. Within just a few years, mobs of youth called Khmer Rouge had rampaged through the middle class, humiliating, torturing, and killing its most prominent members. Doctors, lawyers, teachers, engineers, police chiefs. Anyone with glasses was considered a bourgeois counter-revolutionary. You may remember a movie about this subject called The Killing Fields. It depicted the mountains of skulls that were found after the Marxist rampage ended. 2 to 3 million Cambodians were worked to death or killed outright by that mob of insane Marxists. Now, ours isn't a small country. We have about 20 times the population that Cambodia did in the 1970s. But are we immune to the hateful whims of a timid college professor who studied Marxism and then set out to transform his nation? Or does that sound familiar? Does that sound like the insidious process that was started by Barack Obama with his transformation of this great nation into a shadow of its former self? Pay close attention to what I have written for you in this book, because not only can it happen here, it has been happening here. It is happening here. There are not yet mountains of skulls, but there are mountains of dead souls, and that is the beginning of the end of this nation unless it is turned around. No matter who wins this election, even if it's a Republican divorced from the progressive leftist doctrine of Obama and his cronies, it will be a Herculean task to reverse the damage that this administration has done to all of the fundamental institutions of our great nation through its systematic poisoning of the nation's body politic. This is a book that is both a warning and a hope. A hope that you elect the right person, because if you elect any Democrat who has been tainted by the Barack Obama, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren form of socialism, it's inevitable that this downward spiral will continue, and there will be no stopping it. The process that began with the affirmative actioning of America, the feminization of America, and the LGBT mainstreaming of America is not only growing, it has a new fellow poster child, the Islamization of America. Even if we don't wind up with actual Islamic Sharia law once the Muslim in the White House leaves, we'll wind up with something like it. Liberal fascism codes of behavior that control both public and private activities and limit our actions in our own homes and the freedoms guaranteed to us under the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. In the chapter that follows, you will see what happened to Iran when it was Islamized, what happened to Iraq when it was Islamized, what happened to Lebanon when it was Islamized, and what happens to any and every nation that permits itself to be taken over by fanatics. Listen carefully. The decay of American culture. What happened to our beloved America? I know what's happening now. We have let in a sea of cancers. Some of them are progressive elected officials that are eating us up from within. The question is, how did we get here? Nearly a half century ago, we put a man on the moon. Now leftist protesters reveal their full moon in broad daylight on New York City streets. With no help from Al Gore, despite his ridiculous claims, we Americans invented the information superhighway. Internet entrepreneurs created companies such as eBay, thereby accelerating global commerce. Now we have congressmen of both political parties texting underage boys and tweeting out pictures of their appendage to young girls. How did we decline so rapidly? The only certain thing is that America's wounds are internal, and that has left us vulnerable to attack externally. Radical Islamists are determined to kill us and wipe Great Satan America and Little Satan Israel off the map. ISIS, Iran, Al-Qaeda, Boko Haram, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Saudi Arabian Wahhabi nutcases all want to destroy us. The World War II generation faced threats head-on. Now, through inactivity or liberal self-loathing, we help those who are trying to kill us. Take the Iran nuclear deal, which gave more than $100 billion to a nation chanting for our destruction every day. Not just chanting, but working on it in heavily fortified nuclear bunkers and in hidden sheds where IEDs are built to kill our soldiers. How insane have we become? Iranians in Tehran yell, "Death to America!" We respond by giving them the tools to carry out their wishes. The greatest generation defeated the Nazis and communism. Now radical Muslims are threatening us, and uncaring, oblivious Bernie Sanders-supporting millennials are too busy Instagramming and Schminstagramming to fight. Islamists watch training videos on how to carry out jihad against the infidels. Our kids are too busy watching YouTube videos and taking selfies and reducing our language to simplistic bursts of OMG and LOL and WTF. Everything is a selfie. It's about the self. Our enemies are preparing our funerals, while our young people worry that pictures of the funerals will not show up on their Instagram accounts. Through its proxy, ISIS, Iran tried and apparently failed to set up a global caliphate, while we strive to become the next Mozambique, one of the poorest nations on the planet. How did the Islamists go from being a regional power to a global fighting force? How did Americans end up actually supporting our enemies? It starts with a culture that shares a common bond with our enemies. They don't want us to exist, and sadly, neither do we. Forget good breeding, where we are respectful to one another and don't take major offense at every minor setback. We don't do any breeding. Islamists have 14 children apiece, so losing 7 children to homicide bombings is a drop in the bucket. We went from having 2.3 children in every family to an abortion culture and an overpriced Manhattan loft. A 3-bedroom family house is a waste when there is no family. Islamists ban birth control and turn their women into baby jihad factories. Their population is expanding exponentially. London has a Muslim mayor. He got in before the United Kingdom found its full-throated, unified national voice and left the European Union and its race-shaming assault on the populace. By the way, did you know who his predecessor was? Boris Johnson, the man who led the Brexit revolt. Here's something else Muslims in London have. Fundraising advertising on the sides of buses for Islamic Relief. I'd like to know what they're fundraising for. Islamic Relief put the phrase "Glory to Allah" on the sides of buses in London around Ramadan to urge good Muslims to give for whatever its purposes are. And everyone stood aside and watched. I suppose if the buses have Allah's name on them, some Muslims might think twice before blowing them up, right? They'll kill each other, but they won't defame the Prophet or his Maker. Maybe we all just need to walk around with Allah's name on us to be safe. They already had Allah's name on a mosque near the World Trade Center murder site, which was given 24/7 police protection by the taxpayers of New York City. Maybe an Allah storefront or gift shop would stop them from bombing the area a third time. You think I'm kidding? For more than a year, a sign in the window of that insult offered free Qurans in Spanish. How long before other cities in Europe and the United States have radical Muslim mayors and senators? Remember these words when you hear about more European nations with Muslim elected officials. We have feminists demanding a life of free sex with unlimited trips to the abortion clinic while our enemies multiply among us in closed towns even our police are afraid to enter. It reminds me of the mafia communities near where I grew up in New York. The mob policed those streets. No one else was needed or wanted. Our declining birth rate is killing us, except for single mothers on welfare who have 4, 5, 6 kids by different fathers and get paid per baby. Most people would never connect abortion to radical Islam, but you're smarter than most people. Don't just take my word for it. Look at the numbers. There are 1.2 billion Muslims in the world. The United States has, at last count, a population of 320 million people. With so many illegals, it is tough to get an accurate count. There are roughly 4 times as many Muslims as Americans. They keep adding to their ranks, and we keep importing illegals because our people eliminate their own babies. At this rate, we will go the way of Euripistan. Italy has had a declining birth rate in recent years. Europe is finished. Its citizens refuse to reproduce while Islamist women keep churning out the next generation of radical Islamists. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reports that approximately 18% of pregnancies in the United States ends in abortion. By rough calculation, that is nearly 100,000 more people than in the entire state of Vermont. Did you hear what I said? We're talking about some 750,000 abortions. Imagine if we woke up one day and found out that all of Vermont was aborted. As tempting as it is not to bring the next Bernie Sanders into the world, think of an entire state just empty. That was in 1 year. Since Roe v. Wade in 1973, 54 million abortions have taken place. We have voluntarily killed off between 15% and 20% of today's population, except for the fatherless kids in poor communities. Like tobacco growers, we pay to keep those impoverished, failing families coming. They add to the progressive ranks, to the future of the socialist movement. The next time you hear a leftist say that illegals do the jobs Americans refuse to do, just remember how many Americans we killed off. Had those babies been born, there would be no labor shortage today. Their children and grandchildren could have joined the U.S. military. Instead, Islamists are breeding and Americans are bleeding. It's easy for Islamists to chant death to America. We have eliminated 1/5 of their obstacles, made their job 20% easier. At least some Americans are still having children. Unfortunately, many of those children spend their formative years being taught how to surrender. The emasculation of American boys is one step short of suicide. Muslims are living in patriarchal societies while American boys are emasculated, raised not even by mothers in many cases, but by nannies who are busy texting while they push baby carriages. Schoolyards used to be filled with kids at recess playing games like kill the guy with the ball. Nobody died. Boys played with G.I. Joes and girls played with Barbie dolls. Kids played freeze tag without a single incident of sexual harassment. Not long ago, I heard about a young boy who was suspended from school for blowing a girl a kiss on the bus. Not too many years ago, cartoons were filled with violence. Bugs Bunny tied a gun barrel in a knot, and Elmer Fudd's gun went kaboom, covering his own head with black soot. Wile E. Coyote chased the Roadrunner and fell off a cliff to his destruction. We as children watched Superman cartoons, but we knew not to try and jump off the roof. Teenage boys watched Rocky and Rambo and Conan films. Then they went home without trying to kill anybody. Some of us started lifting weights and working out so we could become buff like Stallone or Schwarzenegger. We did not need liberals to tell us the difference between pretend and real life. Common sense and our parents handled that. Now schools across the country are canceling gym class. Dodgeball apparently promotes aggression, and insurance companies worry that climbing a rope or vaulting a horse will leave schools open to lawsuits. Even rock, paper, scissors is too violent. Rocks and scissors could be used by children to harm each other. Paper requires murdering trees. It's no wonder that Islamists produce strapping young men, while America produces sensitive crybabies and metrosexuals who use product in their hair and lather up with expensive body wash. Muslim children are taught hate in madrasas. They are taught how to kill infidels and the blasphemers. American boys are suspended from school for arranging their school lunch vegetables in the shape of a gun. Perhaps it's good they get suspended. Michelle Obama is starving our children anyway. Pizza, burgers, and fries are replaced with gluten-free, calorie-free, flavor-free garbage that the kids throw away. Then they race home or run to a fast food joint and grab a hamburger, because growing boys want more than an apple slice and a fiber protein bar. During World War II, young boys volunteered to go overseas to save the world. The Korean War had Colonel David Hackworth teaching our young military how best to kill a commie for mommy. Now American kids on college campuses retreat to their safe places to escape from potential microaggressions. Islamists cut off heads and limbs, and our young boys shriek at the drop of a microaggression. And we haven't seen the worst of it. Virtual reality glasses and helmets are coming, with programs and games that will immerse us in a fantasy environment of our choosing. What will happen to our youth then? They'll be fighting in some first-person shooter game while real shooters walk right up to them and put a bullet in the front of their skull. When I watch movies and TV shows from the 1950s, I see an America that was bold, daring, macho, unafraid, and proud of itself. When I look at America today, I see something else. This is because a very small band of radical, fanatical leftists have seized every aspect of the media and every avenue of government imaginable. They're ashamed of the very idea of American exceptionalism. They are not the majority, and they don't speak for the people. They are a group of political deviants. They are political deviants in a statistical sense, a political sense, and a social sense. This small band of deviants in government and in the media has wrecked the United States of America and turned us into a nation of near slaves. These craven apologists have turned the grandchildren of the greatest generation into jellyfish less brave than the average Frenchman. It is easy to blame the 1960s flower power and the radicals that spawned them, nihilistic forces such as the Black Panthers and the Weather Underground. It takes a village of people to destroy a child, and they need to be called out by name. Yet Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama are just symptoms of a much bigger disease. What we're living through right now is part of the disease the Cultural Revolution started around the time Barry Sotora was born. This Cultural Revolution was begun by Allen Ginsberg, Timothy Leary, and Bella Abzug. That was a group that you could never find in hell itself to do more damage to a nation. At least Benedict Arnold was a war hero before he turned traitor. Those people were born agitators. They were all born silk-smooth salespeople of destruction. One pushed rampant sex with animals. Another one pushed rampant drug use, mainly LSD. The other one, God knows what she pushed, a demented mashup of feminism and socialism. There was also a lawyer involved, William Kunstler. He leapt to the defense of anyone who burned, spit on, or defaced something clean and good. Abzug once said, "The establishment is made up of little men, very frightened." Of course they were frightened, long before fire-breathing dragon ladies such as Hillary Clinton and Debbie Wasserman Schultz set about castrating the entire male population, Helen Thomas and Bella Abzug existed. As the self-titled dean of the White House press corps, Thomas was more of an Islamist than a feminist. Her demands that Jews be expelled from the Middle East and returned to Europe made her more of a jihadist than a bra burner. Thomas was able to traffic in Jew hatred by intimidating American men. She shouldered male journalists aside not to break the glass ceiling, but so she could intimidate presidents. Helen the Hideous had nothing on bellicose Bella. Abzug never missed an opportunity to praise murderous regimes while bashing America. She once thundered, "Imperfect though it may be, the Beijing Platform for Action is the strongest statement of consensus on women's equality, empowerment, and justice ever produced by governments." That was in 1995. Only 75 years after Americans ratified the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote. Meanwhile, China's one-child policy resulted in plenty of girls never being born. It may seem odd for a flaming feminist to support such sexism, but leftists love anything that increases abortions. She pushed gay rights, environmental rights, and racial justice, all of which have nothing to do with improving the lives of women. Abzug convinced a whole generation of women that feminism required leftist activism. Her husband was a member of the Young Communist League, and she shared his leanings in practice, if not in title. She was also a typical leftist hypocrite. While pushing the gay agenda on everyone else, she lamented having two daughters who both turned out to be lesbians, adding fuel to the fire of nurture versus nature. After decades of claptrap about being a strong, independent woman, she confessed her emotional dependence on her husband. She encouraged young girls and women to try to defy biology, all the while pining for her husband's strength and heterosexual children. Even if you haven't heard of Bella Abzug, you've probably heard of one of her children, her insidious spawn. Bella Abzug is the mother of the gender-free bathroom madness. Her call for people to reject biology in favor of self-chosen identity is what's behind letting men into girls' bathrooms, as long as the men say that's where they belong. Well, of course they're going to say they belong there. What else would a pervert say? Bella Abzug couldn't see the madness that would cause, though that wouldn't have stopped the lunatic, which is exactly where we are today. People are so warped that they're willing to give up safety and privacy so that more perverts than transgenders can use any bathroom they want. She didn't think down the road, and as a result, her actions, which she thought would protect women, ended up putting them in danger, and the liberals have all embraced her theories. Like Abzug, Timothy Leary did everything he could to destroy young minds. I knew that clown personally. His drug of choice was LSD. He became an academic who became famous for telling students to turn on, tune in, drop out. Psychedelic mushrooms were part of his curriculum. His idea of humor was spouting destructive thoughts disguised as harmless platitudes. There are three side effects of acid: enhanced long-term memory, decreased short-term memory, and I forget the third. Acid does not enhance long-term memory. Like many typical leftist academics, Leary was as anti-God as he was pro-drug use. He said, "Monotheism is the primitive religion which centers human consciousness on hive authority. There is one God, and his name is, substitute hive label. If there is only one God, then there is no choice, no option, no selection of reality. There is only submission or heresy. The word Islam means submission. The basic posture of Christianity is kneeling. Thy will be done." Leary influenced a generation of young minds to equate Christians kneeling in prayer with Muslim terrorists. It is no wonder that after the September 11th attacks, so many liberals sought to equate a mythical, radical Christianity with the truly violent radical Islam. Meanwhile, the CDC reported that an all-time high 47,000 people died from drug overdoses in 2014. The insane liberal response is to push for more legalization. Colorado and the state of Washington have turned into drug centrals with a few trees. Young people flock to Denver and Seattle to tune in, turn on, and drop out. If they're lucky, they won't drop dead. Allen Ginsberg was another leftist who contributed to America's moral decline. He abandoned his Jewish faith to take up Buddhism. Yet his real religion was leftism. He was a beat poet, which even today is considered by leftists to be an actual vocation. Beat poets are like community organizers, but with more candles. Ginsberg's famous 1956 poem, Howl, excoriated capitalism and paid glowing tribute to homosexual sex. After being put on trial for possession of stolen goods, he pled insanity and spent several months in a mental institution. In leftist circles, that made him an intellectual. In the 1950s, publishers refused to print Howl, deeming it a work of pornography. When one publishing house did publish it, it was put on trial. The charges were dismissed when an activist judge declared that graphic descriptions of anal sex had redeeming social importance. Naturally, that made Ginsburg a hero to leftists everywhere. Like Leary, Ginsburg's support of LSD brought him more followers among those seeking to tear down America's fabric. In 1956, Ginsburg wrote, "America, I used to be a communist when I was a kid. I'm not sorry." Ginsburg found in his travels that other nations were not interested in his message of political and moral decay. In 1965, he was deported from Cuba for publicly protesting the persecution of homosexuals and referring to the murderer Che Guevara as cute. His most vile contribution to society was being a supporter and member of the North American Man-Boy Love Association. "I'm a member of NAMBLA because I love boys too. Everybody does who has a little humanity." Just to be clear, we're not talking about Spencer Tracy's movie, Boys Town, about the benevolent father Edward J. Flanagan. The words behind the acronym are meant to be taken literally. At least Ginsburg failed to become an attorney. William Kunstler succeeded. No act of leftist violence was too shameful for him to defend. He was the defense attorney for the Chicago Seven, the anarchists who set Chicago ablaze during the 1968 Democrat convention. As a result of his advocacy, Jerry Rubin, Abby Hoffman, Tom Hayden, and the other four miscreants spent 0 days in jail and paid $0 in fines. Kunstler also defended the utterly indefensible Weather Underground terrorists. Obama's pal Bill Ayers, the felon who was Obama's mentor, who was front and center in the anti-Trump protests in the spring of 2016, set off bombs that murdered innocent civilians. After Ayers and his wife, Bernadine Dorn, were acquitted, Ayers chirped, "Guilty as hell, free as a bird." Ayers spent his post-terror years influencing a new generation of potential domestic terrorists as a professor. The Weather Underground was a self-described communist revolutionary group seeking to overthrow imperialism. Kunstler defended the violent military Black Panther Party. Many of the Black Panthers were eventually convicted of violent crimes, including murder. The globe is still reeling from their brutal activism. Modern groups from the new Black Panther Party to Black Lives Matter have taken part in violence under the cloak of social action. The new Black Panthers held billy clubs outside polling stations in an attempt to prevent white voters from participating in the political process. In Ferguson, Missouri, Baltimore, and elsewhere, Black Lives Matter is known for burning down stores, looting, and stealing electronics in the name of racial justice. Abzug, Leary, Ginsburg, and Kunstler are not abstract theoretical agitators. Leary hired me to guard his LSD from being stolen. Ginsburg briefly appealed to me. I was a young leftist on the verge of my own insanity. I was naive and stupid. I grew up. They never did. It takes time to destroy a civilization, and like ancient Rome, it typically occurs from within. Even the worst activists have to learn their behavior from somewhere. There is no leftist activist gene, unless one believes that babies are born stupid. Miserable ideas have to be taught, and the original teacher of leftist activism was an Italian communist named Antonio Gramsci. Gramsci's legacy is his theory of cultural hegemony. Gramsci posited that the key to capturing a society was by taking over its cultural institutions. Winning political elections was not enough. Republicans controlled the White House for 28 of the 40 years between 1968 and 2008. During that same time, leftists still made advances. Conservatives focused on winning 270 votes in the Electoral College, normally won by an Al Gore-proof, William Kunstler-proof majority. Liberals hijacked the cultural institutions. During World War II, Hollywood was patriotic. Jimmy Stewart was a war hero. Tyrone Power was a Marine. Future star Burt Lancaster served in Europe, while Charlton Heston was stationed in the Aleutians. Clark Gable trained as an Air Force gunner. Gable was too old to enlist, but he went anyway. Do you understand what America meant to those men? American movies accurately portrayed America as the good guys. Cartoons such as Der Führer's Face, which featured Donald Duck, mocked Adolf Hitler. Just before the United States entered the war, the great Charlie Chaplin lambasted both Hitler and Benito Mussolini in The Great Dictator. That was then. Now, Hollywood is now run by ardent liberals. The few pro-American movies out there have to be privately financed to get made, and when they are, the filmmakers are usually pilloried in the press. Religious movies such as Ben-Hur and the Ten Commandments used to be mainstream. Everyone went to see them. Now they're a niche market, barely getting a theatrical release before showing up on Netflix. Look at television. There used to be shows about heroes such as Gunsmoke and Peter Gunn. There were shows with respected father figures such as Bonanza and Father Knows Best. In the 1970s, we even had Good Times, in which John Amos played a strong black father figure. Then came Dad as Clown. From The Cosby Show to Everybody Loves Raymond, the father was reduced to a punchline. On The Simpsons, the father is a moron, the mother is the adult, and the father is just another child for the mother to contend with. It is no wonder boys are growing up emasculated. The left has wiped out the father as a respected figure. The left has long owned the big three television networks, but one of them has turned its entire programming into leftist indoctrination. NBC owns more than the communist-leaning MSNBC. The parent company has done plenty of indoctrinating on its own. Climate change used to be the domain of a few crackpots. Now every night kids are bombarded with the more you know ads that are far from innocuous. Little kids are scared to death that the climate change boogeyman is hiding under their beds, preparing to leap up and drown them in acid rain. In 2004, Americans overwhelmingly supported gay marriage bans. Ballot measures defending traditional marriage played a key role in President George W. Bush's re-election. The public supported traditional marriage. Then, the television networks intervened. Ordinary people in Middle America were portrayed as outside the mainstream. By the time the Supreme Court legalized gay marriage in June 2015, the public opinion had already shifted. Young people were almost lockstep in favor of gay marriage. The television carpet bombing of their minds worked. Women kissing women and men with husbands are now standard fare on primetime television. They appear way out of proportion to their actual presence in our society. In an effort to promote as much contrived, unrealistic, anti-white, anti-heterosexual diversity as possible, those characters are often gay and people of color. Don't believe me? On The CW, which caters to a very young demographic, two popular shows are The Flash and Arrow, both about superheroes. One has a white police captain who mentions his husband more than any other male character talks about a wife. The other has an African-American scientist who is always talking about or showing up hand-in-hand with his boyfriend. On that same show, the white female superhero, Black Canary, has a female Asian lover. While ISIS recruits young killers, we're recruiting our young to the gay lifestyle. The lunatics are running the asylum. In addition to the entertainment industry, liberals seized control of the schools. Randy Weingarten is the president of the American Federation of Teachers. Her job is to make sure that teachers who molest children are given protection from being fired. Try firing a bad public school teacher, then wait a few years. the unions give millions of dollars to liberal Democrats in exchange for lifetime protection for all involved. Teachers are free to indoctrinate students without any fear of interference from parents. Huckleberry Finn gets removed from classrooms while Heather Has Two Mommies replaces it. The left controls the libraries. When was the last time you saw a Republican librarian? Like Facebook, which we now know shuts down conservative trending topics, the libraries decide what books are on the shelf and what books are restricted. Facebook does so in part by design and in part out of ignorance. The indoctrinated children who monitor its sites don't recognize topics of interest to conservatives because they weren't exposed to them when they went through their Ivy League towers. A Facebook contractor once admitted that there was bias in what it chose to keep out of the trending topics and that the company's minions were doing so subjectively. You don't have to delete something in order to censor it. You just have to bump it down in the rankings so nobody can find it. Then the liberals can say, "That's not censorship. We don't censor." No, they don't. They just hide facts they don't like. Facebook isn't the only institution exercising this sort of suppression. Go to your local library and see how many more copies it has of some liberal diatribe written by Bill Maher or Al Franken than my own books, even something sweet such as Teddy and Me, which, as many of you know, is about my dog. And where are those copies, if they do have them? Hidden away from the eyes of people who most need to see them. People who need to be exposed to new ways of thinking, sane ways of thinking. When I was growing up, the most radical music we had was by Chuck Berry and Elvis Presley. Today, music is the domain of the left. Rappers sing songs about murdering police officers. Then young people march in the streets, chanting for more dead officers. When the inevitable happens, the left expresses shock that their calls for violence led to violence, then blames the cops anyway. And where's the outrage from feminists when rappers talk about beating women or refer to women as hoes? I won't ask how an abbreviated version of whores became a term of endearment among African Americans. It came from a systemic lack of respect for women. I won't even ask how the progressives failed to call the culture out for that. They didn't want to stifle racial expression, except among whites. Or didn't you see the quick demise of the Confederate flag, the de facto ban on whites playing previously white parts in white Broadway shows such as 1776, the attempt to silence Donald Trump wherever and whenever he spoke? The lunatics aren't just running the asylum, they're running our nation, ruining our nation. The Internet is supposed to be free and open for people to seek information as they see fit. Try looking something up. Google it. Google is run by a hardcore leftist. So are YouTube and Facebook. A Freedom of Information Act request led to the release of some of Hillary Clinton's emails. One of those emails showed that her people had sent various emails of their own to executives at Google and YouTube. After the Benghazi debacle, Clinton's people persuaded the executives to block the YouTube video that Obama and Clinton blamed for the attacks. Had Americans seen the actual crudely made video, they would have scoffed at the notion that the attack on Benghazi had been about a video. The video was blocked for several days while the Obama administration had its employees get their lying story straight. I mentioned Facebook before. Facebook's founder, Mr. Undershirt, Mark Zuckerberg, is another one who shuts down pages on his site that are critical of Islam. Yet pages dedicated to finishing off the Jews are allowed to stay up. Zuckerberg is an indoctrinated millennial who now uses his multi-billion-dollar empire to poison the next generation of young leftists in training. Are schools, libraries, movies, television, music, and social media are all used to advance a politically correct, anti-white, anti-American agenda. Meanwhile, Islamists use all of these tools to advance teachings of their own physical and moral superiority. When traditionalist Americans flex muscle, our cultural institutions make sure we are derided as imperialist, ethnocentric bigots. When Islamists spew rhetoric that is actually imperialistic, ethnocentric bigotry, our cultural institutions tell us to be hyper-tolerant in the name of diversity and multiculturalism. Gramsci's teachings gave us Abzug, Leary, Ginsburg, and Kunstler. They taught our children their anti-American, anti-heterosexual, anti-male, anti-war, radical environmental agenda. The cultural institutions spread the lies. The newest cultural institution, social media, spreads these anti-American messages to every corner of the globe in seconds. The result is leftist agitators Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton reaching the highest positions of power. Barack Obama didn't start this decline. He was put in place by the radical left, a cabal of Ted Liberal Lion Kennedy, Howard Dean, John Edwards, and John Kerry, to push it as far as he could. Mao Zedong's China is apparently the model. I am currently reading two gigantic biographies, Mao, The Unknown Story, and Wild Swans, Three Daughters of China, both by Yung Chang. She actually lived through China's Cultural Revolution. She grew up in China's communist elite, was living in a world of privilege, and worked in the Red Guards. Then she turned against the tyranny of Mao. She tells the story of the Cultural Revolution, in which her own parents were denounced, tormented, and sent to labor camps far from the luxuries of the homes that they had known. Her father had stood up to Mao Zedong. He was a part of the communist hierarchy, but he eventually had enough with that crazy madman, Mao Zedong, and stood up to him. But he was driven insane and hounded to death. Yung Chang was exiled to the edge of the Himalayas as a teenager, and she worked as a peasant and a barefoot doctor. You think it can't happen here? I'm telling you this because you think that we're immune and that we're protected by a constitution. Well, there is a man in the White House who shreds the Constitution one page at a time in every way he can. He and his psychotic band of gangsters do everything they can to undermine every amendment to the Constitution. Attorney General Loretta Lynch replaced gunrunner Eric Holder. Lynch has threatened to take away and imprison those of us who engage in any kind of speech that she deems is edging towards violence regarding Muslims. She is also looking for ways to prosecute and jail climate change skeptics. Her friends who control the universities are imposing speech codes, according to which every boy is a potential rapist and every girl a victim. Social justice has replaced actual justice. Just ask the Duke lacrosse team. Funded by that criminal agitator George Soros of MoveOn.org, Obama and Hillary have been grooming the next group of Marxist social justice warriors. Black Lives Matter, Code Pink, Occupy Wall Street, and every other violent leftist group is a direct consequence of Gramsci's model being applied to the most vulnerable among us, our children. Where is Lynch when Black Lives Matter agitators say that privilege can be eliminated if the privileged step aside or are forced aside to make room for the so-called less fortunate, or, as I like to call them, the less motivated? Where is the protection for free political speech then? Is that hate speech or protected speech, according to Lynch? Ask Donald Trump how his free speech is being protected when Black Lives Matter, MoveOn.org, and other domestic terrorist groups interrupt and suppress his rallies. Lynch likes free speech for just a privileged few children, her favored children. How is free speech being protected when Obama mandates that any company using the words Negro and Oriental instead of African American and Asian will henceforth be denied government funds of any kind? How is anybody protected when the government edits the phone conversations with the shooter in the Orlando nightclub massacre and takes out references to Islam, references the shooter himself made? They're part of the record. How can it be offensive when a Muslim himself says them? Isn't that what we're always being told, that you can't use those words because they're our words? So now, they're even censoring Muslims who want to tell the truth about their sick beliefs. The dictator is rewriting the dictionary. He's rewriting history, except the bad history he makes. We'll have that forever if Hillary wins. No, wait. Burning books would produce environmentally damaging smoke. He'll compost them instead. While our indoctrinated young leftist radicals are tearing America down, our Islamist enemies are building their armies up. Our kids are curled up in the fetal position in their safe places, hiding from climate change monsters. If they are the last line of defense, the Islamists should soon be able to take control of America the way they did Europe. It's time to build an ark, folks. As King Louis XV of France put it, après moi, le déluge. Though the caliphate in the Middle East is apparently stillborn, the threat is far from ended. Is the U.S. now like the USSR? It's hard to get a message out when the media is corrupt. I saw an article, Back in the USSR, How Today's Russia is Like the Soviet Era. It's a hit piece on Russia. The American dunces who hate America, in other words, the entire press corps, all hate Vladimir Putin, too. The official government press in the United States is ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, and by the way, Fox News. You can throw Fox News into the mix of the official government press. Why do I say that Fox News is now a government mouthpiece? I saw a poll on climate change on the Fox News channel. I looked carefully. It asked, "Do you think the United States should sign the climate treaty?" On Fox News, they said that 66% said yes, except they were quoting a CBS poll, not one of their own. Now, why would Fox News quote a CBS New York Times poll unless they're part and parcel of the same establishment mentality? The answer is that they wouldn't, unless they are. So now, you can put an X through Fox News. So all the media in America hate Putin, even though he's now revered by most people in the world because he's the only one with the guts to take on ISIS. We have a media that is so corrupt it tries to tear down someone doing good just because Barry from Honolulu, this thin, smoking, hostile man in the White House, is so jealous, so envious of Putin's strength and resolve and popularity as any narcissist would be. And it's because Putin isn't an elitist. He didn't go to the best schools, and he doesn't always behave in a way the elite thinks he should behave. He's blunt to the point of crudeness. By the way, does this sound like anyone who is running for president? That's another reason why Barry doesn't like him. Most of all, though, it's because Putin and Barry are on opposite sides of the critical issue of what to do about terrorism. If you study world events the way I have done every day of my life since I was 18, you'll see that your president is backing ISIS. Do you have to be a genius to figure that out? All the weapons ISIS uses are U.S.-made weapons that Barry ordered to be left behind. Not that Barry is alone in his hatred for Putin. Turkey shot down a Russian jet, which, by the way, was shot down over Syrian airspace, and it landed in Syria. There was no warning given. All of you who supported Turkey should be ashamed of yourselves. You're nothing but holdovers from the Reagan era. You think that this is the same Russia as the Soviet Union that Ronald Reagan hated. You idiots have to grow up. You have to open your mind to what's going on here. Don't you see that you're now on the side of Turkey and the ISIS groups? Back to the leftists in the media. NBC tries to do a hit piece on Putin. As I mentioned before, it was called Back in the USSR, How Today's Russia is Like the Soviet Era. The diatribe, which also defames a great Beatles song, by the way, lists how they are similar. First, the anthem, one of freshly elected Putin's decisions, was to restore the Soviet national anthem from 1944, the one he grew up with. Two-thirds of the population approved of the move by 2002. So, that's a bad thing to the communists in this country, or shall I say the new socialists in this country, or shall I say the men without a country in this country. They don't like the Russian anthem. That's a sign that they're living in the Soviet era. NBC continues. The party. In Soviet times, there were no parties other than the Communist Party, and membership was a prerequisite for career advancement. Why don't you just substitute the word Democratic Party and tell me if it's any different from America today? Tell me if it's different among the news media today and among the politicians today. Next, it goes to spies. Here's what the article says. By the mid-2000s, up to 80% of the Russian ruling establishment was made up of people with backgrounds in security services, according to a study. The trend was confirmed in numerous subsequent studies. Above all, this included the Soviet secret police, the KGB, which handled counter-espionage and brutally suppressed political dissent. Okay, that's real. Now, the KGB's successor, the Federal Security Service, the FSB, okay? If you watch Homeland, that's the FSB, is both powerful and feared. It is tasked with fighting spies and extremists, but it also monitors the political opposition to the government. Think about the FBI in America, the CIA in America, the Department of Homeland Security in America. Don't you think they're powerful and feared? Don't you think they're tasked with fighting not only spies and extremists, but also the American people themselves? Don't you think those organizations also monitor the political opposition to Obama's socialist government? Of course they do. So what's the difference between the Soviet Union and the United States in this regard? Very little. Next, dissidents. Trying to hit Putin again, the article says, Joseph Stalin, the Soviet Union's feared leader who ran the country with an iron fist from 1924 to 1953, purged, imprisoned, and executed his critics.